Welcome, everybody, to a very, very celebratory episode of Pod Strickland. This is episode 136. The Knicks emerged victorious in a very tight, ass-cheek-clenching finisher, 104-103, to go 4-1. They are now tied at the top of the Eastern Conference, along with the Chicago Bulls, who they defeated, and the Charlotte Hornets, who are apparently awesome now because Miles Bridges is the greatest player of all time. All right, but we are not going to talk about them. We're here to talk about the Knicks. And joining me today is my co-host, Prez. Prez, what is going on?
I'm lying down as I record this because I need to lie down after that game. That was very stressful. I don't handle stress very well. So I'm ready to decompress. I got some barley tea here. I'm trying to center myself. But I'm very excited because I feel like this game meant more to the Knicks, maybe just because my social media is more Knicks fans than Bulls fans, but like the Bulls were already like undefeated and they got the big name pickups in the offseason. So it's like, oh, if they lose, it's, oh, the Knicks are good. So they're still 4-1. But for the Knicks, it's like, must prove ourselves or else we're a fraud.
I feel you. I do think it feels that way. It also feels like, because the nature of how we won, it's going to be like, well, actually, like, yeah, well, actually, go fuck yourself. But joining us here to, wrap up the game and talk Knicks, a first-time guest, very special guest. He is a writer and senior digital producer for the Deez and Samara Show on Showtime. It is YC, and that's at YC. On Twitter. YC, what's going on?
Hey, guys. Nice to meet you. Glad to finally be here and talk to you guys in person a little bit.
And what a day you chose. What a day you chose.
What a day. I mean, when you were like, oh, we're available tomorrow after the Bulls game, I was like, not the Bulls game. Because it's just like, in my mind, this is like the October playoff game because of all the Bulls agenda on my timeline. So this was a big one. I mean, we didn't win it in the most fascinating, in the most fashionable way, I guess. But, you know, a win's a win, especially against a team that we are so much worse than. So, you know, I'll take it.
We'll have you back for a more stressful appearance, like after we play the Pistons or something.
Yeah, right.
Well, I think Miro would tell you that the, the most important thing here is that the Knicks covered.
Oh, absolutely. 1.5 points. We have to learn the point spread to like work for this show. So, you know, I just had that ready to go.
You have to know the point spread, and I'm assuming everybody has to be a Knicks fan. Is that just how it works?
Well, mostly, but we have a surprising number of people from Boston and Celtics fans. I know you guys were guessing because I could hear you guessing like what team I was going to say, like Nets, like Thunder. A lot of Celtics representation for some reason, but you know,
one of the funniest time periods on Twitter following Miro's Twitter account was like leading up to that summer of 2019 when everything in Boston was going to hell, and I'll never forget he had a tweet. I have it like bookmarked, I'm sure. And it was like, he like compared the drama in Boston. He said it was more dramatic than Degrassi. And I have that like bookmarked. It's like one of the funniest things I've ever read. But before we get started, I do need to mention Strickland does have a Patreon now. You can find it at patreon.com/thestrickland or on our homepage at thestrick.land. Pod Strickland on Monday is still free. Draft Strickland is still free. Alex, Zach, and Matt's mail.bag is still free. And we will likely be adding another free podcast to the lineup at some point. We have things in progress. Things that are changing. Pod Strickland on Friday. This podcast right here. And my mailbag with Jeremy and Drew. That will be available on the Patreon $6 tier or above. Also, if you subscribe to the Patreon $9 tier or above, you will get access to my solo podcast. I just dropped an episode this week with Jonathan Macri, and also exclusive weekly articles from both Jack Huntley and Matthew Miranda, two of the best Knicks writers and flat-out basketball writers out there today. If you want even more access to us, you can join the $15, $30, $50, or $100 tiers, which include a ton of benefits, ranging from watch parties, sitting in on pod recordings, guest appearances on podcasts, and even potentially hosting a podcast alongside yourself. Alongside myself, I guess I should say. But no matter what, if you're a Patreon patron or not, we thank you for your support. None of this would be possible without you. And without further ado, let's get back to the podcast. Let's talk a little bit about the basketball game that we just saw. The Knicks won again, 104-103. I thought, like, this game told me a lot about this team. I think they're definitely better than the Bulls, regardless of how the game ended, which we'll get to. But, like, watching the game play out, I thought it was obvious that the Knicks have more talent. I think they have more cohesive talent that fits together and probably makes the game better, easier for each other. I think we create more high-value shots, which is kind of makes sense when you think about it. I don't know. I just felt like when I was watching this game, I felt like I was watching a team that has that it's just like a cut above the Bulls. And maybe that's too much to take away from one game. They have a lot of new and moving pieces. But yeah, I mean, that's just kind of what I thought. Prez, what did you see?
I think both teams are really good, but the Knicks' depth obviously is a huge advantage. The guys the Bulls were bringing off the bench, aside from Caruso, who was awesome, were not particularly inspiring, especially once Patrick Williams got injured. They didn't really have that much depth. Another thing that kind of shined through is like the Knicks getting a lot out of their talent. I feel like the main guy the Bulls really get the most out of, at least today, is Vooch. But like everyone else, there's so many times I was like, LaVine took a shot or DeMar took a shot, and those are the two players who are your best players. And I was like, oh, I'm happy they took that shot. That happened like a million times, and sometimes it went in. And then that's even without even getting to like, oh, Caruso took a shot. Oh, I'm happy with that shot or something like that. With the Knicks, it's like, even when they're not hitting, I'm very happy with most of the shots. Like, the shot profile this year is just so crazy for everyone. Like, Kemba takes the shots he's good at. Derrick Rose takes the shots he's good at. Even Alec Burks, who, like, takes the wildest shots on the team. So I'm like, oh, that's the shots he's good at. So, like, and it's not, like, a dumb, like, 18-footer or something. So, it's very hard to, like, it takes a lot, and we'll get to it because it happened at the end of the game, but it takes a lot for the offense for me to be like, what the fuck is happening? Like, I don't like this.
I definitely agree with that. I thought like today was pretty interesting because you can tell the Bulls were like, I mean, other than the Julius post-ups, we were not really able to create threes like off drive and kick or anything. They were very content to stay home on shooters and like on pick and rolls. It was basically 2v2. Like that's what it was. They were not, they were not going to come off the shooters. So I think you saw Kemba kind of have to make an adjustment. He had a turnover early in the game where he tried to swing it out to RJ, I think. And it's like, dude, just take the floater, like, or just attack Vooch because.
He took the floater later too. So there you go. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like that was like the only real frustration for me. And I thought they figured that out in the second half because. Basically, on every possession in the second half, when we didn't either turn the ball over or it wasn't the last 3 minutes of the game when we decided not to play basketball anymore, I thought we got a good shot, like a really good shot each time. And most of it was just like keeping it simple and not trying to overcomplicate it because the Bulls aren't running some like complex fucking Nick Nurse box in one against Steph Curry in the finals scheme. It's like very, very basic shit that they're doing, which is. Fine, it works for them. I understand why they're doing it, but like for a team like the Knicks with the firepower we have in that lineup, we're really like all four of the five guys can credibly create and shoot off the dribble. You like that should be a very, very easy defense to pick apart once you kind of recognize what they're doing, and that's what I saw anyway. I don't know why. See, what did you like? I mean, you mentioned Kemba, who I thought. Had a really, really good game. Arguably, maybe the player of the game. I would say RJ was probably the best player. But, what are your thoughts on Kemba? This is the second game now in a row where he's looked, like, a lot sharper, I think.
Yeah, so I was at the last game, and Kemba just looked a lot better. Like, I don't know if there's not like a more complex way to say that, but I think it just feels like early on he's just trying to be like a fit in kind of guy. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just trying to like defer. There's a lot of like looking for Randall and like feeding Randall and like on the wing, and it just felt like these last two games he's like, oh no, I can still like get to the basket, you know, when I need to, and I can save some energy and do that, or I can, you know, pull up, shoot at least, you know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. If he can just do that all year, he's 100% better than we've had, you know, in years. So I just feel like he's just looking for his shot a little more, which is kind of what you want out of him. He doesn't need to be John Stockton out there. He doesn't need to completely blend into the background either. And I just feel like these past two games, he's really added a lot just by being able to create a shot where there's nothing. Like, there was a possession in this game where there was like absolutely nothing. It was like the shot clock was running down. He just pulled up from the top of the key, like with his defender just all over him, and he just nailed a three. And it's not a great shot, but you're glad that someone can take and make that with, you know, 3 seconds on the shot clock, where we didn't have that really before.
Yo, does his shots stress y'all out?
It always feels
stress me out.
His shot is like, it feels like he's hanging in the air longer than I remember him hanging in the air.
He's also just so small that you always expect it to get like blocked from behind. The guy like chasing him around the screen or something is going to get it. And sometimes it does happen. I think it's just because he's so, like, I think if he were actually listed at like 5'10", 5'11", everyone would be more cognizant of actually how small he is, and they would treat his game differently. That 6 feet is like a perception thing that makes you not think about it as much.
Every rear view contest is so close. I'm like, no, like, even the ones when we set the screens farther out, like because he stops right on a dime and then hangs in the air. Like, I think the only player who I've seen punch it is Matisse Thybulle, because he's a lunatic. But like,
it's also the only thing Matisse Thybulle can do on a basketball court of value.
Exactly.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, so Schwinn coming from left field with the Sixer slander. But yeah,
all these Atlantic teams are getting it. Fuck,
yeah, we gotta get these jokes off over number one in the East, baby.
That's true. That's crazy. I didn't even know that. That's right. But yo, Kemba shots, like, I'm just not used to it, because
you're used to Elfrid Payton, dog.
And even Rose is so deliberate, and like he's, you know, like he's waiting for the advantage, and then you see it come, and then he capitalizes off it like a flower unfolding.
Kemba always pulls up with like just a little less space than you'd want him to have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Always a little bit more, with less margin for error, you know?
The one thing right now that's pissing me off with Kemba, it's not really pissing me off, but it's like, I feel like he's not, like, I know he has a comfortable mid-range pull-up. Like we all know that. We've seen him do it God knows how many times against the Knicks, but like just throughout his career, obviously, right? And I just feel like right now, every time he gets inside the arc, he's like, doesn't know what he should do. And I'm like, dude, just fucking do the same shit you've done your entire career, man. Like, I don't care. Just hit the shit.
He's working out that inside the arc shit with, especially with like Mitch rolling. Like,
yeah.
He did. It's a little better every game, I feel like. We saw Mitch, not just from Kemba, but from other people, get some nice dump offs and some alley oops and stuff. And like, by the time it's like New Year's, he's gonna take more advantage of that, and that'll help free up the mid-range. Because, like you said, he doesn't need much space, but it's even more crowded in there than it is out of the 3-point line.
The one thing I've noticed is Kemba. I mentioned this on like the solo pod I did, which probably nobody listens to. he always likes to snake the pick and roll. So he likes to use the pick and then come back into kind of the vertical space where the roll man would be. And you can tell Mitch is like, he's like ready to roll. And he's like, what's this little midget ass doing here? Like, he's like, what are you doing here, man? This is my space.
You should sneak some Elfrid Payton praise into your solo pod just to see who's listening.
It's like a quiz. And we're going to take attendance today. I mean, I think that's part of it. And you can see that actually with Mitch, with Fournier too, because Fournier likes to snake it also. And Fournier just like, I don't know what he even does half the time. Once he gets inside the arc, I'm just like, you're about to do some stupid shit, aren't you?
He plays inside that arc how I play 21. Like, I'm just kind of fucking around, and then scoop shots are involved, but somehow that should be working, except he's doing it versus professionals.
Fournier and Burks, like, Fournier turns into Burks inside the arc, where you're just like, you don't want him to do anything that he's about to do, and then you're just like, alright, well, hopefully it goes in. But he took some bullshit-ass fadeaway today from the baseline that was like, I literally wanted to shoot myself when he took the shot, and then somehow it dropped in, and I was like, alright, well, I guess that works. I think with Kemba, you're definitely starting to see, like, he's getting more comfortable. I agree, like, YC, I mentioned that before, too, that I think the first few games, he was, like, definitely trying to just fit in and not step on anybody's toes. And the last couple of games, it definitely feels like he's more being like Kemba Walker. I actually thought today he could have, I think he definitely should have been even more aggressive looking to score than he was. Like, he only had 12 shots tonight.
Feels like he had, like, 50. Yeah. Because they were all, like, ball breakers.
Yeah, I mean, they were all big time threes too. And like, yeah, it just feels like I want him to shoot more. Like, I like, especially on a night like tonight. I mean, you look at the shot distribution, like Julius Randle 11 shots, Mitch 4 shots, Kemba 12, Fournier 14, RJ 15, and then OB had 2, Taj had 3, 4. I don't even remember that. Rose had 10, Burks had 6, Quickly had 7. Like, I like the balance that we're kind of achieving right now, but I also think there's a time and place for Kemba to just be like, fuck it, like, I got it going. And tonight was definitely one of those times because he absolutely had it going. And, you know, I mean,
Do you think some of those issues are just like lack of familiarity or like with his teammates and shit? Or
I also think that, like, this is Julius's team, right? So he's like coming to Julius's team. He doesn't want to come in and just be like, all right, dude, I'm about to take like 20 shots tonight and you can just fucking set picks for me. Like, you know, like, you want to kind of balance that. I thought down the stretch, especially like when it got to 104.98, because it was like, what, 104.91, I think they cut it. They cut it all the way down to one, obviously. But it was around 104.98. I was like, I was like, enough with the Julius token screen roll into the post up thing. Like, just do something else. And I thought Kemba, like, that's one where, yes, Tibbs should call a timeout and Tibbs should draw up a better play or come up with a better plan. But I also think that's one where, like, Kemba just needs to, like you're the point guard. So
be a veteran point guard, right?
Yeah. Like, that's one where I just think Kemba needs to be like, Julius, get the fuck out of the way, dude. Like, we're not running this play for you.
Yeah, he's not going to do that this early in the season. Yeah, that's 100%. The thing. And, like, one of the things I wanted to bring up is, like, is Julius kind of still figuring out how he's going to operate within this offense? He's been successful while trying to figure it out because he's super talented and an amazing hooper. But like, today, you could tell he started off the game like, oh, I'm going to get my guys their shots. And then it was just working. So he was like, I'm going to continue to do that. I don't know. I don't remember who we played last year, the game where he has 17 assists.
Okay, see.
Yeah, that's kind of what happened in that game as well, where it was just like they were throwing him mad attention at him much more than in this Bulls game. In this Bulls game,
and it's OKC, like, who is like they threw attention at him, but they have no clue what they're doing.
No, they don't. I mean, that's what Philly did as well. To be fair, like they were just doubling people, and then like not they didn't know what to do after that. Anybody on the team, fuck Philly. So Julius was like, He was like, all right, I'm going to lean into this point guard thing, but then the game got close. And I don't think he expected to have to deviate from the way he was playing. And once he did, you know, like, he was like, all right, I'll just flip the switch from posting to passing to posting to scoring. And it worked for like a second because he started drawing like a million fouls. But that's still, you're still playing with fire there to just do the same thing over and over. So he's still figuring out like what's the balance between point Julius and like ISO wing score Julius and like balancing with Kemba Julius, because that shit is all new for him. So it'll probably be a while, I think, before they really get that down.
Yeah, I'm with you. The thing with Julius, like, I feel bad for him in the sense that, like, I know I've already seen people in my mentions like, Julius almost cost us the game. Like, why does he ISO? Why he's got to keep the team involved? And it's like, every team in the entire fucking NBA at the end of games, it does not matter who your coach is. It does not matter how much talent you have. It does not matter any of these fucking things. Every single team does this. Every single team ISOs their best guy in some capacity, basically.
It was also a mismatch. Lonzo played excellent defense for a guard, and, like, he's a great defender, but, like, let's not get it twisted here. It's a mismatch. He was about to foul Lonzo out. Like,
dude, Julius is so funny because you can just tell when, like, he's like getting super angry just because the guy is, like, defending him. Like,
where was Patrick Williams on those plays? Like, I was, like, kind of
hurt. Oh, he got hurt. So he's
okay. I was following what was going on late in the game. I was like, "What the fuck? Why is Lonzo on Julius?" I was like, completely zoned out.
But to be honest, like, I don't think it changed much for them because Pat Williams hasn't been closing games. He hasn't been closing games. Like, they've been going with that four guard lineup. Basically,
They don't really have somebody who's the kind of, like, Pat Will is the closest kind of player to someone who you put on Julius, but he's still, like, is he even 20? Like, he's still so young. So, like,
yeah,
it's tough because, like, all the other guys, like Javante and Derek, those guys are twigs.
Javante Green is also just in the league because he's friends with Jason Tatum.
Yeah, he's hooping.
Yeah.
Wow. So the Bulls can't put their 20-year-old on, like, the other team's best player. Couldn't be my team. I don't know.
No, I mean, look, we're definitely gonna talk about RJ because I thought he was fucking awesome today.
Yeah, it's great.
But yeah, like, I think, like, going back to the Julius thing, like, I'm not even excusing it because I agree, like, there's also a point where you have to go away from just ISOing Julius. But, like, that to me is not, like, Julius isn't just, first of all, he wasn't bringing the ball up, okay?
It's not his fault.
Yeah, like, if Tibbs is, like, you could hear Tibbs, by the way, the entire game was hilarious. Tibbs was basically, like, calling out everything the entire game today. So you can tell he really wanted to win this one and ruin Noah's little party. But, like, he's clearly calling those plays for Julius. So at some point, you can't just blame Julius for, like, oh, well, why didn't he pass it every fucking time? It's like, well, he's not a robot, first of all.
And even if he wasn't calling those plays, if their teammate throws it into Julius and then they all just stand there, mm-hmm. like, what is he knows what they're expecting him to do, which is work, you know what I mean? So I feel like it's tough that he gets the blame for that because they clearly are setting him in position to make a play. Like,
yeah, like, that's the only purpose of that play is, like, either Julius creates something for himself or he kicks it out to shooters. And, like, you look at his box score, he took 11 shots today. Like, people are going to, like, it's not like he was out there just chucking today. He had 11 shots. He took 4 shots in the first quarter, didn't take another shot until the second half. Okay,
double-digit assists.
Yeah, well, he was just one assist shy, but still, like, he had 9 assists to 4 turnovers.
Yo, do 16 y'all think, boards. Do y'all think he was trying? Like, I thought he might have been actually hunting that 10th assist.
No, I don't think so, because he stopped.
Before it got tight.
No, I don't think so. I think he was, because he was, like, he literally kind of stopped passing at the point he had 9 assists to me. Like, there was a few where he also went to try and run it. Like, this is the other thing, too, is there were times where they went out of the post-up, and he actually ran, like, a dribble handoff with Evan, too. I think they did that on 2 straight possessions. Evan actually had a 3 rim out. So, that could have been his 10th assist. All of a sudden, the narrative is different. The game doesn't come down to some really annoying asshole possession at the end of it. But, like, yeah, I mean, I just have a really big problem with, like, blaming Julius there. Because, to me, that's also a function of, like, one, this team is getting used to each other. And, two, like, Tibbs is calling that play out, basically. Or the team is just flowing into it. So that's not really on him. Like,
I have much less issue with his shooting and much more with, like, if you're gonna take that put back,
yeah, that was a bad play.
You better make that shit or else pull it back.
That
out.
Was just
because there was what I don't 10 think seconds, he was thinking. 13 seconds.
That was clearly a pull it the down reset, but I think it was just, like, instinctual. He just, like, put it up without fucking the whole rushing thing that he talked about. That was him rushing.
Yeah.
The other thing too is, like, yeah, that was the thing is he could have literally grabbed the board, done, like, a power dribble, and then gone back up in it, and he had enough time to do that. Like, he didn't need to rush it. And he did. He fucked that up. I'm sure I haven't listened to his postgame or seen any quotes or anything. I'm sure he knows he fucked it up. And I'm sure that probably played in his fucking mind when he went to take the free throws, to be honest. You could tell he was in his head. But, look, they got the win. I think Julius did a lot of really good things this game. I tweeted out at halftime that the way he played, he clearly had learned a lot from the Hawks series. I still think that, like, after the at the game at the end of the game, I thought he still had a really good second half for the most part.